As we've been reporting, early this morning, President Trump falsely declared victory, asked for all voting to be stopped, said the ongoing counting of mail-in ballots was fraud. Of course, the counting of mail-in ballots is always done no matter how long it takes. The Biden campaign promptly said so. But what's happened since? Let's check in on the thinking in the campaigns.
Yeah, NPR national correspondent Asma Khalid joins us. She's been covering the Biden campaign. And also here is NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. He's been following the Trump campaign. And let's start with you, Franco. What is the White House and the campaign saying about President Trump's assertion both today and last night? He's first alleging the counts that are happening today are in favor of Biden, and that's voter fraud. And he falsely declared victory last night and is asking for the vote counting to stop. Are they standing behind that?
Well, I mean, the president certainly is not backing down. He tweeted this morning about his lead, quote, magically disappearing and how strange it was. He said people are, quote, working hard to undercut his advantages that he had and have in Pennsylvania and Michigan. And, you know, the campaign is not undercutting that, but they're saying that they will win if legally cast ballots are counted and not illegally cast ballots. But they're not specifying what is illegal and what is legal.
Yeah. Republican analyst Chris Christie called it a bad strategic and political decision for the president to say what he did last night. And Rick Santorum said he was distressed by Trump's words. But no Republican elected official has publicly criticized Trump for those remarks. Are there signs that Republicans are trying to shift the messaging?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard from some of those Republicans as well. And, you know, I can say that certainly the focus of the talks that we've had with the campaign have not centered on that. They did not make accusations about fraud in Pennsylvania or Michigan. They just said that the pollsters were wrong and that they were not taking into account rural communities that were full of Trump supporters and, you know, kind of putting them into the count of the others.
Yeah. Well, Asma, I want to ask you to come in here covering the Biden campaign as you are. What a day it's been. And, it was predicted that the early voting would go to Donald Trump because this was mostly walk-in. And then the mail-in ballots would more likely tilt towards the Biden campaign. You know, they're now saying they see a path to victory. It wasn't, you know, this morning it was much tighter. What's going on there?
Yeah, you know, we heard from the Biden campaign earlier this morning, and Biden's campaign manager, Jen O'Malley Dillon, said that she feels the former vice president is on track to win this election. They feel confident, and the lead that they've seen now, both in Wisconsin and Michigan, support that theory. Of course, Wisconsin is still incredibly close, and as we know, it sounds like the Trump campaign is wanting a recount there. But look, they have said that they feel like the early vote, the ballots were going to favor former Vice President Joe Biden. And in fact, this was part of the Democratic strategy for a while to encourage people to vote early or to vote by mail. And that's what we've seen so far. But they're also trying to encourage patience. They say that this process and making sure every ballot is counted could take a while.
Yeah, well, I want to ask you both, and maybe just start with Asma and then Franco, you just pick up. But these paths to victory that the candidates had, you know, through states like, as you said, Nevada, Arizona, Michigan, Wisconsin for Biden, for Trump, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Alaska, perhaps, you know, that's kind of been the map all morning. But what was the biggest shock? You know, Asma, start with you. What did a campaign really expect that didn't happen?
Well, I think that they were projecting a really bullish sort of image, if I were to say, even yesterday, early morning or the day before. You know, I mentioned to a couple of our editors that I felt like for much of this season, the Biden campaign had been fairly cautious, you know, wary of repeating some of that overly optimistic attitude that Democrats had during the 2016 election. But in the last sort of 48 hours, it felt like they were really rosy about their chances. We had seen Democrats campaigning in traditionally Republican states like Georgia and Texas. And there was a thought that this could be really a mandate for Joe Biden. To me, one of the clearest takeaways of last night and into this morning is that this is not a mandate for either candidate. It is an incredibly tight election. Mm-hmm. We see in some House races that Democrats actually lost some House seats. They don't seem to have picked up all the Senate seats that they expected.
Yeah, you know, it's probably way too early to ask these questions because we're all looking to find out who is the ultimate winner. But Asma, you know, are they acknowledging their weaknesses? Biden, primarily among Cuban-American voters in Miami, where his campaign started door knocking very late. Or was it just that he knew he needed to focus on remaking the blue wall in the Midwest? And I think we might have some...
By the fact that I actually don't seem to be...
And it feels like we might be having some problems with... Yeah, we may be having some problems with Asma's line. But Franco, you know, when I'm thinking about Trump's weaknesses, Trump spoke to many times during his campaign directly to this population of suburban women, which, to be clear, we're talking about white suburban women. Did Trump show weaknesses among these voters and in his own base, which is often described as white blue-collar men? I mean, Biden had fewer votes in Youngstown, Ohio, for instance, than Clinton did, so maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly those aspects there. I mean, one of the things, like, you know, just to pick up on where Asma left off is, is, you know, kind of like this outcome with Florida. You know, there was a lot of weakness with seniors, for example, and there was a lot of concerns that, you know, seniors' dissatisfaction with how the president was handling the pandemic. You know, 230,000 Americans had died from this pandemic, and that was seen as one of those very big weaknesses. But, you know, in Florida, President Trump won Florida, and he won it, you know, because he kind of built some strength with another group that was not expected, which were Latinos. You mentioned the Cuban Americans. There's also the Venezuelan Americans, because President Trump's message against socialism really resonated with them. To me, that was so fascinating because it really set off kind of like this wave of enthusiasm temporarily in the Trump campaign. And I had people texting me that it was like deja vu from 2016.
Asma, I want to bring you back in here. You're back, and we were talking a little bit about the weaknesses of Biden and maybe the focus on remaking the blue wall in the Midwest.
Yeah, you know, I think that certainly that is part of the focus. You know, I was struck, though, if you look at some of those so-called Obama-Trump counties, these are pivot counties all across the Midwest. You know, my colleague Danielle Kurtzleben and I were looking at some of them in both Iowa and Ohio. These were kind of reach states for Democrats. But one thing that I was struck with was the fact that some of those pivot counties that went for President Trump in 2016 actually looked just as red, if not redder, last night than they did 4 years ago. So, you know, there was a lot of talk from Democrats that Biden, they thought, was the candidate who could perhaps appeal to white working class voters and win some of those folks back. It doesn't seem like that, you know, sort of a broad brushstroke seems to be true. But I do really want to echo also what Franco was saying about, you know, Florida. I mean, Florida to me is kind of the really wildest story of the night, in part because the Miami-Dade margin is just astounding. I mean, Hillary Clinton won Miami-Dade by roughly 30 points in 2016, even though she lost the state. President Trump was able to shrink that margin to single digits. I believe that in the end of the night, it was like 7 or 8 points. I mean, that's just a huge, huge difference. And even though Joe Biden did better in other parts of the state of Florida, you can't really compensate for that when you're talking about the biggest county in the entire state of Florida.
And Asma, I just want to ask, do you think that was because Trump successfully pinned the title of socialist on Biden?
You know what? Look, I think that's part of it. But I was also texting with a former Biden campaign staffer. She hasn't worked for them for quite a while, but she was a fairly, you know, senior Latina in the campaign. And, you know, she acknowledged that she felt like the campaign could have been doing more work in Florida earlier. And there are Latino activists this morning who feel, you know, critical of what the Biden campaign did in terms of investments broadly within the Latino community. And these are not new concerns, Robin. I mean, I felt like I kept hearing them throughout the campaign cycle. Of course, the Latino community is not a monolith. And we see in Arizona, for example, Joe Biden did do well. But in Florida in particular, I kept hearing concerns from people. They wanted more investment from the Biden campaign. So I was struck this morning to hear Biden's campaign manager refer to the fact that they thought, you know, that this was not an underperforming by Joe Biden. It was just that Trump increased his support with Cuban Americans, because I think both of those statements are true. Biden didn't do as well as some Democrats had hoped he would.
Right. And Franco, I just want to ask you, in the minute we have left, what was the role of the coronavirus?
Well, the role of the coronavirus was, you know, was huge. I mean, that is basically what, you know, Joe Biden was able to put President Trump on the defensive about. I mean, it was the central part of his campaign. And it was, you know, such an issue for President Trump for months, you know, since the summer. President Trump has been trying to change the focus of his campaign away from the coronavirus, trying to focus on normalizing, trying to get things back to normal. And like he began, he ended, you know, continuing to downplay the significance of the virus, trying to tell people that, you know, on November 4th that, you know, all the coronavirus would be gone, you know, businesses would open, you know, states would open. It's November 4th right now, by the way. You know, we have a surging pandemic right now, and cases are on the rise, hospitalizations are on the rise, and it was something that President Trump could not escape no matter how hard he tried.
Mm. That's NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez and NPR national political correspondent Asma Khalid. Thank you to both.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.